You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Well, hello, and welcome to episode number 75 of the Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian, who you can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. We are here with Chris, who you can find at SkateXEdge. And for the first time ever, we are here with Damian Johnston, who you can find on Twitter at Damian Johnston. Our number one for the week is Swamp Thing on DC, and our over-under is Seattle Bands, so get ready for probably a super long conversation on that.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
Let's welcome Damian for starting off. Do you want to tell the fans anything about yourself?
The fans?
I am much balder and much wider than I used to be.
Hey.
If anyone knows.
See, Brian, you guys have something in common. That,
I have a tear in my eye right now. Like, for real.
We have carbs in common.
Oh, my God. You have no idea. My entire existence is carbs at this point.
Oh, yeah. I'm there. Yeah, I don't know. I used to be in a hardcore band that some people seem to still like, and I am in a band that no one seems to like.
Going down some roads. I like it.
Yeah. It's a journey.
I spent 9 of the last 15 years in bands that nobody not only didn't like, but didn't even know existed.
Yeah, so, it's fun.
I spent the last 20 years listening to bands nobody knew existed, so, I mean, nailed it.
Touché. Although one of those bands may actually start doing stuff again in the near future. And when I say near future, I mean the next 10 years. Not in the next 2 months.
No idea what you're talking about, but okay.
Well, I'm going to be 40 and
from what
really...
Damian has told me, Damian actually has actually been worked within the comics industry.
I mean, it could help the show if you were to...
elaborate?
Bring up some... legitimacy here, I guess.
Yeah. I'll do my best.
All right. Well, standard format here. We usually, discuss what we've read this week. I have once again been uber lazy, and I only read the number one because I've been back to reading novels and playing a lot of Elder Scrolls, which is super weird. But yeah, I got nothing to mention, so I will let Brian take it away.
Yeah, let's see. I watched Carlito's Way last night, and that's about it. Because I'm
really.
What?
Usually you're going to spout for like about 15 minutes about this and that, and excuse me, you've got nothing.
More or less. Yeah, I have nothing. I watched. Like I said, I came home last night, and I'm like, yeah, Carlito's Way sounds like a good idea, and that's what I did. So. If you've never seen Carlito's Way, I got nothing.
Oh.
Oh, no, I take that back. I read that number one of the visions that you gave me.
How was that?
It's super weird. It's as weird as, I can't remember if it was like the AV Club or New York Times or whatever, said it was really just weird and dark, and it kind of is really weird and dark, and it's awesome. I was pretty into it. Not
Scott.
What I expected.
Hey, Scott, did you read Fade Out 12 yet?
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
Okay.
I haven't read 11 yet either. I have 11 and 12 sitting over there ready to mosh.
Okay.
But, you know how I read.
Yeah.
Barely ever.
Yeah. I just got caught up on, well, not really caught up, just been reading. I read The Violent number 2. I actually read The Sheriff of Babylon on Vertigo. That's actually really good. It's a crime noir that takes place during like Desert Storm.
I was gonna say that looked like a little too Iraq War for me.
And it's actually pretty cool.
I don't know. War stuff doesn't really resonate with me, I guess.
Well, you don't have to buy it.
Did you say it's more like noir though? Than it's like
there's a crime that's taken place, and the one of the main characters, he's training the police in Iraq.
Okay, that's interesting.
And someone turns up dead that was a a trainee of his. So they contact him, the Army contacts him, and they're like, well, hey, you know, we found this one of your trainees, man. You got to get him. Get him out of here or whatever.
Yeah. It's interesting to take something like the Iraq War, which is generally a setting for one kind of story.
Right.
You know, and just use it as a backdrop for a different kind of story. It's kind of interesting. But.
And I read Spread 12 last night. The Violent, which is really good. That's a really good, really good book. And I've never read. I'm not too familiar with what's it, Bryson?
Bryson, yeah. Canadian.
Yeah. So I know I was talking to you about some of the other things that he had done, and I knew that Last Contact, is that what you were saying, or Last Contract?
Last Contract, yeah. That's the other thing I read this week, and that's if you're familiar with Ed Brisson's stuff, he did the Murder book too. Three issues. I can't remember what it came out on a couple years ago. It's also quite good.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, he's just on. I guess he was going to keep doing the Murder book, and then he moved over to the Violent, and that's sort of just a, I guess, a similar kind of thing, but with longer story arcs.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So far, the Violent issue one and issue two have been very good, and I like those quite a bit.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, so yeah, I was talking to you about it. Anyone,
like, as a parent, it's a hard book to read.
Yeah. Anyone can understand. Yeah, anyone. I think anyone that's even has nieces and nephews.
Thanks for trying to include us, Chris.
No, but I'm just...
Anyone who's ever visited a playground for any reason.
Wow.
Well, just, you know, I'm not trying to exclude you guys, but I'm just, he's right. Because, like, as I'm reading issue one, I'm just like I was telling you, man, I was like, dude, I just wanted to, like, jump in the book and, like, strangle that ass. Like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's tough. It's
you wanted to strangle because, that ass,
because,
eh?
Because, well, no, it's hard because you hear about shit like that on the news every day.
Let me squeeze that butt.
About someone neglecting their kid.
If we were just to clip that and put it on YouTube... Somebody might assume you're talking about strangling that ass in a different way.
Whatever. But, yeah, that was about it. That's about all I read. I don't know. Damien, you got anything?
Just besides the number one, I didn't really go to the shop this week because a little poor. So I just got that and the Last Contract, the other Ed Brisson thing, which is also crime and quite good.
Now, is Ed Brisson, is he like a Ed Brubaker in terms of like the stuff he generally tackles theme-wise? Because I've never read any of his books, but I've seen him a lot.
I guess so, yeah. I would say so. I haven't read a lot of Brubaker, which is, I know, which I've been told many times that I've been missing out.
You just crushed Brian.
Well, I kind of knew of him like back in the day before he was doing what he's doing now. Like when I was at Fantagraphic stuff, like I think we had some Ed Brubaker stuff, and it was totally different than like what he's doing now. I want to say he started writing like, and then he moved over to Vertigo and started doing like the Dead Boys Detective Agency thing. But I don't think it's not that thing that just came out. He'd like a short story. I don't know. I'm trying to remember.
Are you talking about Dead Enders? Are you talking about Dead Enders?
What was it?
Dead Enders?
Is that what, did he write that?
Yeah.
Okay, that might be what I'm thinking. It's been a while.
That one's okay. It's, I mean, it definitely sounds like a Brubaker story when you're reading it, but it's just, it's different thematically than the stuff that I think he really excels at, like Criminal, Sleeper, Incognito. Like, that's my, the stuff that he's done with those books, and then Criminal, and I said Criminal already. Fatale.
That's yeah, the stuff I love. I was going to check that one out.
Which one?
Yeah, no, Fatale. That's really good. I like that one too.
Cool. Yeah. So from what I've been told, yes, it sounds like it's pretty similar in style, and it's dark, and you know, the Last Contracts. It's a bit of a trope. The old hitman kind of being dragged back into it kind of thing, but there's always something in every one of his books. There's always like a little cool idea, like a little noir idea that you've never seen before in all the 70 plus years of film noir and that kind of storytelling. And in this, you know, this is no different.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. I definitely say The Violent is probably the strongest thing he's got going on right now, but Last Contract is a 4-issue miniseries, and so far so good.
Is that on Image?
It's on Boom, I think.
Yeah, Last Contract's on Boom.
Oh, I think I know what it is.
I think it just came out like not too long ago.
Okay, I think I know what it is now.
Yeah, I want to say a couple weeks ago.
All right, well, let's move on into the number one territory. Like I said earlier, the pick for this week was my pick, actually. I picked the new Swamp Thing. It's part of a 6-issue series that just, you know, started coming out. And personally, I just finished the original Alan Moore Swamp Thing maybe a few months ago. So it's still pretty fresh in my memory. So right off the bat, I like it. It's weird because the artwork, it's got that old look, like the old one, but it's a little like almost modernized, maybe a little crisper or smoother, but it still has that old feel, which I thought was a really awesome way to draw the book.
But isn't this guy, was it Len Wein or?
Len Wein wrote this.
Yeah, but isn't he like one of the OG like co-creators of Swamp Thing?
Yes, he is. Him and Bernie Wrightson.
You know, it's the basic, you know, introduction, you know, Swamp Thing crawling out, fighting alligators, and, you know, and then, you know, he hears the cries for help and, you know, you need to help us find our son. He's disappeared, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I do want to point out there's two things in here that I was a little put off by. Not much, but right away when he's wrestling the alligator in the beginning and he's like, oh, and then I had the vines throw him safely into the swamp a couple of hundred yards away. Now, that's a couple of football fields, but in the panel, he's clearly like 40 feet away. Not a big deal, but I think that should have been maybe a little more paid attention to. But the one thing that really did kind of stand out for me is Swamp Thing pauses a lot when he talks, but I feel like he was almost speaking in full sentences in this. Like, there weren't as many pauses as I was expecting, I guess. Not a huge deal. Overall, I really did. I actually really enjoyed this. Almost as much as I did the original. It's really close. It's up there. But I don't know. What did you think, Brian? I know you're like a huge Swamp Thing fan, so
I'm a little obsessed with it.
Go nuts.
I actually own the collection Roots of the Swamp Thing, which is the first 12 issues of Swamp Thing, plus the original appearance, and I want to say House of Mystery, number whatever the hell. Anyone know that I'm wrong, feel free to jump in and correct me. I know there was a short one of those House of Mystery anthologies, and then there was a 12-issue run with Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson. This reads pretty similar to those early 70s Swamp Things. They're kind of cheesy at times, kind of overly melodramatic in the descriptions of each scene and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I thought that was quite fun as well.
Yeah, this is not trying to be like Scott Snyder. I feel like was trying to mimic Alan Moore in a more, you know, literary sense, I guess. Whereas this was just trying to bring it back to the original feel of it being like almost an EC Comics homage.
Mm-hmm.
Very like the panels move really quick, and like you said, stuff like the football field thing doesn't make any sense, but you're like, whatever, it's Swamp Thing. Like, you could throw him into outer space and it's whatever. Like I said, in the first 12 issues, he's fighting Frankenstein one part, and then he's battling like the ghost of William Shakespeare. It's like completely all over the place.
That's kind of actually, now you mention it, that, you know, a couple hundred football fields and having art be sort of very inaccurate to that. It kind of does harken back to that time back in comics, like, you know, back when Marvel Comics used to think like trees were the strongest thing in the world. It's like Thor would, like, he'd turn into Thor and he'd like throw his hammer and be like, my hammer can destroy anything. And then like later in the thing, there's aliens land on Earth and like they rip a tree out of the ground. They're like, we're the strongest things in the universe. They're like, Jesus, how strong do they think trees were? But I mean, to a kid, it's like, yeah, fuck yeah, tree, man. I can't do anything with that.
Or the scenes where they'd have these hyper kinetic action scenes and they would just go, oh, we don't got enough for a background. Just color it all blue. That's fine.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you could tell Len Wein was trying to, he knew he wasn't going to just try and mimic Scott Snyder, so he just took it back to where he started with it. Yeah. Plus, I wanted to mention that Kelly Jones is doing the artwork on this, and I'm hit or miss on his collaborations with Doug Mensch, but his artwork is always fantastic because it's got that 70s creepy, you know, haunted house vibe to it.
It's very Scooby-Doo-ish.
Almost, yeah, kind of.
But I totally dig it.
I mean, Scooby-Doo filtered through a little bit of Herschel Gordon Lewis, maybe. Like, I wouldn't be shocked at all if the Wizard of Gore showed up for no reason.
I mean, I'd be okay with that. That would actually be a neat crossover. Boom, I'm looking at you. You still there, Chris, or did you just...
Yeah, I'm right here, man.
All right, cool. What'd you think?
You guys, go ahead. Go
well, I know ahead. I have, like, the golden pipes, but, you know.
No, I mean, I agree with Brian. I don't read too much Swamp Thing. Actually, I haven't really read any Swamp Thing at all, so this would be my first. But without going, looking at anything from before, it definitely does have that 70s feel. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to figure that one out.
Right.
And I like the artwork, too. It does, it, I don't know if it looks Scooby-Doo-ish, but it's definitely.
I just hear the drums in the background.
What drums? What are you talking about?
From the old cartoon. Never mind. You don't watch enough Scooby-Doo.
But it definitely has that horror feel to it.
Yeah, and it's hyper-stylized. Kelly Jones has got that like way of drawing muscly things that it's awesome. It's so crazy.
You mean it's like Japanimation where every woman has big breasts?
It's just like every human being has like 7 million muscle groups.
You know who that sounds like? Rob Liefeld.
No, I think.
Yeah. You know how.
Okay.
I mean, granted, his art was shitty.
Yeah, he always put a hill in front of the feet because he couldn't draw feet. So there's always just tiny hills in front of everyone's feet.
But, like, everyone was, like, super muscular. Yeah, they had, like, these super quads, you know, and, like.
Yeah, but
like,
I mean,
size 2 feet.
I think Kelly Jones is doing this clearly out of like the awesome stylized way that stuff can look, where I think Rob Liefeld literally had no idea what people look like.
Yeah, I'm not comparing his style to Rob Liefeld. I mean, shoot. I mean, my 3-year-old son could probably draw better than Rob Liefeld.
Poor Rob Liefeld.
I don't know.
He's really active on Twitter, so maybe you should send this to him.
I actually don't think he's that terrible. I've seen worse. I've definitely seen worse.
I haven't looked at any of his stuff lately, but whatever.
No, the foot thing is legit. But I think, and he's got a thing with faces. They all look weird. They all look like they just ate an entire lemon for some reason.
Yeah. I got all puckering towards this one point.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of anatomy, they're a little exaggerated, but I can't draw anatomy as well as that, so, I mean, I'm not going to...
That's probably true, yeah.
I'm not going to completely knock the guy, and, you know, in defense of Joe, who's never on the show anymore, he did create Deadpool, so...
That's true.
It's not as if he contributed nothing.
There you go, Rob.
Yeah.
We're going to be his new favorite show now.
All right,
just as an aside, do you know him personally?
Me?
Yes.
No, I don't.
Okay. Man, they were talking shit about you all night.
Well,
if that's the case,
I got everything you needed, man.
Blame it on Chris. He's the guy who started it. I defend him.
I will fully admit that he does blow.
Wow.
Okay. Like, I don't think that's what we all landed on, but
yeah, I was going to say it's not like he murdered anybody or
no, but I mean, whatever. That's something for another time, I guess.
Character designs were kind of interesting at times. Like, didn't you design Cable? Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. He did work on X-Force.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Apparently he's a sweetheart, so that makes me feel worse.
He did a jeans commercial with Spike Lee. It can't be all bad.
That's true.
I have no idea what that has to do with anything.
I remember that commercial.
Yeah, I just saw it for the first time like 2 years ago. But you know what? Actually, Swamp Thing's not in that commercial, so...
That's true.
He should be, but whatever. So where are we on this whole Swamp Thing thing?
I don't know. If anyone else had any thoughts, I figure I'll stop talking.
Well, I'm not going to lie. My dog has been getting me out of the chair quite a bit, so I missed everything except my Swamp Thing thing. So if anyone hasn't said their piece, by all means, go ahead.
No, I thought it was good. I thought it was great.
All right, so are we ready to put numbers on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I really did. I mean, obviously, I nitpicked a couple of stupid things, but they were just that, stupid things. I'm easily going to give it an 8.
That's where I'm at. I was going to say, if you're into 70s horror...
Yeah, like I feel like it's a great continuation from the original. I really, I dig most of what I saw.
Yeah, and what more could you ask for by having an OG co-creator actually writing it?
Right. That's probably why it resonated so well with me. See, I know big words.
I mean, that's a medium.
Who knows Swamp Thing better than him?
It's a medium-sized word. I'm going to actually give it a 7.5.
Oh, yeah, because Brian has to stand out.
Yes, that's exactly what I was trying to do. I'm on board pretty much anytime Swamp Thing's in the room, so. But if I had to rank this amongst my favorite, it's probably down a few notches. I really liked Scott Snyder's take on Swamp Thing, liked Alan Moore's take. I mean, I'm pretty forgiving. I like the Wes Craven movie, so. There's not a whole lot you're going to do with Swamp Thing that I'm going to be, like, absolutely turned off by.
Yeah, well, he's not exactly the deepest character, you know.
Well, the swamps in general aren't that deep. It's not ocean thing. Oh, nailed
that's
it.
Good.
All right.
You want to grace us with a number there, sir?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I'm excited to see. I guess it's nice to see it kind of return, and with those people doing it, I think it's pretty awesome. Excited, I guess I give it 8. I mean, I'm kind of getting used to your guys' scoring thing, but I'm super excited, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I thought the antagonist had an awesome Bernie Wrightson vibe that got me pretty stoked on pulling out some old Bernie Wrightson stuff I have. So yeah, I have a lot of enthusiasm, I guess, behind it.
I tend to agree. Yeah, it's generally just a 1 through 10 type of deal, and we generally are pretty forgiving and. Well, highly scored anyway for the most part.
Yeah.
Unless something really sucks.
Curb stomp.
I don't think I was in.
Yeah, but
that.
we didn't review it, so.
Public relations, I wasn't too big of a fan of. I remember that.
That was all right.
But, yeah, overall, we're pretty generous, except Brian when it comes to, creator own stuff. And he just totally moshes on him like an ass.
I still feel bad about that. It's been 6 months.
Who cares, dude? If you don't like it, you don't like it. What is it?
Because it was good, and Brian was just being overly critical.
Well,
but
I liked it better than Andrew, our Mortal Kombat X.
Dude, our 3-year-old nephew can write a better comic than Mortal Kombat X.
Yeah, that's...
No offense, but at the same time, totally offense. That's
DC's putting money behind that all-day offense. That's
terrible. Yeah, right. All right, so Brian pulled a couple of...
Actually, Chris pulled this one.
Chris pulled this one. So, Chris, did you read it, or did you just read a headline and go, yay?
No, I read it, you ass munch.
Would you like to would you like to bring us into the first topic?
Well, it was a topic. The headline was called Artist Analyzes Disrupts Racial Stereotypes in Comics. And... Well, I mean, you can pretty much tell right from there what it entails, but John Jennings, who wrote this article, he's basically...
You are nailing it right now.
Oh, stop it, dude. I'm kind of just going over it again. I did read it, but I'm kind of going over it again.
Yeah, that's why I passed the torch.
For lack of a better word, he was talking about, as he was growing up, how there was not a very diverse group or ethnicities of superheroes as there is starting to come out today, which is true. How many African-American characters could you think of when you were a kid? Besides
when I was a
maybe,
kid?
Like, who, Power Man?
When I was a kid, Superfly. Does Ron O'Neill count as a superhero? He was to me.
Well, no.
Dolomite?
Anyways, Brian goes and stomps on that one.
Dude, I watched a lot
That's
of Black Exploitation
movies. That's
basically
what
then.
The gist of the article was. He was saying how when he was growing up, because he's around the same age as us, he's 40 or something, during the 80s, there wasn't a diverse group of superheroes that, you know, of are, you know, a multicultural characters like there is now, or like they're starting to come out. I mean, like, you know, you had a female Thor, okay? You have Miss Marvel, who's Muslim. You're starting to see, you know, lesbians and homosexuals now in some of the superheroes. I mean, obviously, you know, back then there was nothing like that.
Is this all about superheroes, or is this about comics in general, though?
It's about comics in general, but I mean, that's the thing. That's one of the things that he says. He says when he was growing up, you did not see any of that in comics.
He's also talking about creators too, right?
Yes.
Yes, that as well.
Yeah, I actually, when I was reading his the way he comes up with his ideas, as far as like layouts, where he rolls the dice, and then he, as weird as it sounds, that's what he does. He literally takes dice, rolls them, and then the panel structure is kind of, you know, based off the number or something that he rolls. And it just kind of gets the creative juices flowing for the story. And it's really, I thought that was an interesting way to start a comic book, I guess. But, you know, plus, you know, he puts on, like, art exhibits for, what was it, Gallery 360 exhibits, an all-day symposium focusing on the politics of race and identity representation in comics, which I kind of wish I lived there, because I, you know, looking at some of the pictures of some of the artwork that's hanging up, it looks really awesome. Plus he was talking about how nowadays, you know, how anybody can just make a comic, you know, whether it sucks, whether it's great, anyone can draw it up, go to Kinko's, print 50 copies, you know, boom, you just made a comic, you know. You might not get the backing that you would like if you were signed with somebody, but you know, it's just, it's a medium that he's trying to bring legitimacy to while also, you know, representing these racial stereotypes, I guess.
Have we said his name yet?
John Jennings.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I believe he mentioned it before. I was hoping he did, because I'm kind of scrolling through as Chris is talking and refreshing what I read the other day.
Right, right. Yeah, he seemed like an interesting dude. There's the pictures in the article of the art exhibit. Looks pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So his focus seems to be on women, people of color, and other basically non-white representations in comics, or just comic art, because it doesn't really say if these are characters that exist or these are characters he's just come up with for this exhibit. I'm skimming the article as I say this and fumble my way through it, so.
Well, the funny thing is too is he mentions this book called The Revenger, which actually Image did a book called Revenger. It was Revenger. It was a 4-issue series, and it was like, but he's talking about how in The Revenger, something that he stumbled across is about a black woman whose entire family is killed, and she becomes a one-woman A-team. Yeah, and, you know, it's over the top and blah, 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 but you would never see this in – never see that in mainstream comics. Well, I don't know. I Crossed is pretty over the top.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, I'm just, if he's saying like this comic that she came up with is like super gory and bloody, I mean,
I think it's more of like you might not see a lot of this diversity in mainstream comics, but a lot of these smaller creator owned or, you know, smaller companies who are putting out independent type books, you're starting to see this diversity start to break through, and you know, obviously it's something that's good to see, and he's excited for it, which is why he's throwing in this, you know, art exhibit in conjunction with this, and he himself is a comics creator, and it's just more or less trying to open up everybody's eyes to that there's more to comics than Superman, you know?
Right.
And that's basically the gist of what he's trying to get across, and, you know, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I mean, going back to C2E2, I don't think I recall any of the any diverse creators there. I mean, I believe they were all
Was the people from Bitch Planet there? I mean, because that's a female writer and a
African-American artist. Yeah, Kelly. No, she wasn't. She wasn't there. They're rock stars now. But yeah, you are correct. She collaborated with a professor of women's studies for Bitch Planet, I believe, and she's African American. So I mean,
yeah, I did not know it.
Yeah. I mean, but he's got a point. I mean, I'm sure they're on the rise, but I mean, there's still not too many that I know of.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I mean, the most diversity, as far as that was concerned, was like Storm, you know?
Right.
Well, I mean, like even like within, yeah, I mean, like that, and within comic, like the working, you know, in the comic industry as well. I mean, I do see a lot of Latin American artists. I see their, you know, I see their names in the, you know, but I don't. Well, whatever.
Well, yeah. as he's trying to, you know, break through and trying to legitimize the comic book industry, what other means do you guys think that, you know, we could convince non-comic readers of the legitimacy of, you know, comic books as an actual, like, literary
art form?
Yeah, like, because a lot of people, like, personally, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, but, like, there are just, no matter how you look at it, there's going to be a lot of people out there who just will never give comics a chance, period, because they're just picture books. And, you know, I appreciate what he's trying to do and trying to open up people's eyes and expand the medium. And some people might, you know, be okay with that and they might respond, but I think there's just going to be a lot of people who just will never come to the table.
Well, the point of the question was, how do you get those people to take a second look?
Right. I don't think for some people, I just don't think you can.
I can think of one thing, although I don't know if it's happening anymore, but is everyone here familiar with Art Spiegelman?
Yes.
He did a show, and I don't know how many he did, but I know they actually did it here in Chicago. He did a show where he was on stage with a live jazz band, and the show was called Wordless, and it was the history of comics minus any dialogue or any text. I guess
crazy.
There was a book series that I had seen a long time ago of all these comic stories that had no dialogue and no words at all. And I guess there's like this weird history of that style of storytelling. So Art Spiegelman put together this 2-hour live show where he was describing the stories and going through the history of wordless comics, which is where the title of the show came from. And apparently a lot of, you know, intellectual types were like blown away by the show. I didn't know this stuff existed. So I think that could be one way. I mean, what is that?
Nothing.
Was it me?
Oh, I just got a text. That might have been what.
Oh.
It might looks like my wife's texting me. It might happen again. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. Well, you work for Fantagraphics, correct?
Well, I did. I did in the late 90s. So that was, I don't know, I have to go back probably like 95 to like almost 2000-ish, in that range.
Having worked there, like, what was their philosophy on comic books and graphic novels and so on? Because I know they're vastly different stylistically than like DC, Marvel, etc.
I worked in the warehouse, but I ended up going to a lot of the conventions and got to meet a lot of people, so I do a lot of talking with lots of them, and they were really looking at that time to help kind of diversify comics a little bit. Gary and Kim Thompson, who recently passed away, and Gary Groth, they, you know, started Fantagraphics when they were kids, basically, out of a basement. And they were big fans, like huge fans of Gil Kane. Like, oh my God, they love that guy so much. And any like 1960s, anything 1960s superhero up to the 70s, they love that stuff. But then when they got into like the late 80s, they're like, we really want to add something here. So they would hire people doing comics that were, doing something really interesting, and it wasn't like an equal opportunity thing where they were trying to like fill a quota or anything, but they certainly would look outside as much as possible from traditional places and find, you know, lesbian creators or, you know, guys who have been just doing like weird mini comics, super underground stuff, like just people who dealt with a lot of things that were different. So they were always just trying to find variety in any kind of way they could find it, whether it was in the creators or the storytelling or the style. I mean, they've definitely changed as a company since I left. I mean, they've really, their books look so nice now, and they do tons of them. I mean, when I was leaving, they were getting ready to fold at one point. So it's certainly a different beast. But yeah, they were always looking for that, you know, to help that. They had a artist named Hoche Anderson, who's African-American guy. I think he was born in London, but I believe he lives in Canada now. But his art was awesome. He did a Martin Luther King biopic called King, which is still available. And recently he's done a couple other things, something called Scream Queens, which I want to say is about like jazz. He did a Fantagraphics, I don't know if you guys know this, but Fantagraphics had a porn line for a while. Like porn
not
comics.
Surprised, truthfully.
Yeah, it's called Eros Comics, and
I think I have some of those.
Hold on, let me write that down.
I'm sure they're available there. Some of them were just like straight up crazy porn, but a lot of times they try to get
sweet.
A lot of times they try to get pretty interesting creators to do those too. Hoche Anderson did one called "I Want to Be Your Dog," which
Chris
is great.
Chris is the resident 14-year-old on the show.
You know, actually, the first place I ever saw Bill Willingham, the guy from Fables, was he did a porn comic for Eros called Ironwood, and he wrote and illustrated it, and it was just all like medieval porn.
Hold on,
I'm not gonna lie, I think I might have some of these, because a few months back a friend of a friend's brother gave us 8 long boxes full of comic books, and it had not a lot, but there it had a handful of those weird old goofy porn like comics. It was,
and you're like, dude, hold on, I'm going to put these to the side.
No, it's actually kind of funny, because I was going through them one day with Mike, and his girlfriend was here, and she was flipping through one, and she opened to a page, and it was just like, this guy's getting fisted. What are you guys reading? It's like, yeah, dude, we're not reading it. We're getting them out of the box, so when we give them away at Comic-Con, no kids are grabbing the weird stuff, you know?
That would be hilarious. Some 10-year-old, look, Mom, look what I right. got.
Mom, yeah. That's the coolest booth ever.
Yeah, there's some messed up titles. I used to, you know, package all that stuff up and go to the conventions, and the guys that would come into the Eros part of the booth were a very specific bunch of dudes.
And for some reason, they all had trench coats on. It was weird.
Yes.
Well, it's actually...
Yeah, holy shit, dude. Wait, what? No, that's not it. Hold on, never mind. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that pretty much is going to lead us right into the next topic, which was... apparently, it was every month. A lot of these comic book companies put out a report and show, like, how many women they've had working that month. Did anyone else look at the article?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, and maybe it's just me, and I know that, you know, people were saying, you know, yay Boom, because Boom had the most, and it seems to me like most of them, even no matter what company, they're assistant editor or editor. Or sometimes color, but for the most part, it's like less than 10% of cover writers, pencils, inks, you know. But, you know, and at first I was like, man, I kind of like, I feel like I see a lot more women's names on books. So I don't know where they're all at. But then, you know, when I start reading through the comments, and I was like, you know, a lot of it varies so much every month, because, you know, it all depends on the availability of them, because a lot of these people are independent artists, writers, whatever, what have you. So they're bouncing around from different companies all the time. So, I mean, that could, I suppose, account for a lot of the low numbers, but that wasn't meant to be funny, but okay.
No, sorry. I was reading some of the titles of those comics, dude. There's one called Milk Mama, Pink Sniper.
Oh, my God. Those are great.
Slut Girl.
Somebody needs to do this research off the air. Go, dude, giggle like a weirdo in the bathroom after the show so people don't know this.
There's one
part
called
of you.
Tales from the Clit.
Oh, that sounds great, too.
Did you not read porno magazines when you were 12 up in the train tracks like a normal prepubescent male in the 80s? I'll show
you. I just think these titles are funny.
Oh, no, they definitely are. There's no doubt. Next time you stop by, I'll pull those other ones out so you can
just
giggle.
Give them
to him. I know, right?
No, I don't want them.
Liar.
Anyway. Right,
they're going to be under his bathroom sink. He's going to pull them
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
never
right.
mind. But yeah, it just seems like, you know, with all, it, you know, it all depends on availability. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but most people work independently and they work on a contract basis. They don't stay at these companies for long, right? I mean,
it doesn't seem like it.
I mean, it does feel like comics are, you know, has been the boys' club forever. But, I mean, I feel like a lot of the books I pick up, you know, have female writers, colors, inks, letters, whatever, what have you. I feel like maybe I'm just missing something.
Well, my question or whatever, in based on this topic, was: do you think that it's going to take like a generation of a large population of female readers to have a larger inclusion of women in comics? Because it seems like there is a growing amount, but
I think it's been a significant growth in the last 5-10 years.
Right, but I'm thinking that it's going to take like a 10-year span of new reader, and there does seem to be a very large... I actually read recently that the largest growing percentage of comic book readers are females, between the ages, I think, of like 14 and 25 or something like that. I'm saying, is it going to take like a 10-year period of those females reading comics, getting into them, going off to college, get their art degrees or whatever, and then we'll see like a more balanced creator.
It's
sphere.
Definitely possible.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like the more indie non-superhero comics have always had a better female representation. Maybe I'm wrong. Because it seems...
Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it seems like the Fantagraphics and the Abrams Comic Arts and those kind of comic book companies have more of a balance. I'm not super familiar with those books, but I do read books from those non-Marvel monthly DC books. So,
yeah, I'd say so. I definitely noticed that, you know, Drawn and Quarterly, Fantagraphics, they'd always have, you know, a pretty good stock of those kind of artists and creators. I mean, a lot of times those books are written and drawn by the same person too. So
right.
But I mean, those. I think if you were looking to get something published, you'd probably find if you want. I mean, maybe not so much nowadays, but I think in the 90s, if you were to walk into a comic book store, like if you just walked up to the random clerk, if you were a young lady and you asked like, oh, what's a good comic that I might like? They'd probably immediately steer you towards like Fantagraphics and Drawn and Quarterly also. I mean, there was that period of the 90s where they're like, well, you know, here's a bunch of superhero women that are drawn insane, so you could maybe you like that. Or, I mean, I guess I'm saying is, like, I think maybe there was a, even within the world of comic books, women have probably been steered towards certain things. I don't know if I'm going on a weird tangent here, but...
We all do it.
Well, I actually think your perspective, having worked at Fantagraphics, is a little more informed than, say, me, who's just an outside observer who walks into the shop every week and go, oh, okay, and then walks out with my stuff and lather, rinse, repeat the next week.
Yeah, I'll definitely say, like, Fantagraphics parties always seem to have, like, the most, you know, equal amount of men and women at the party. We had down in San Diego, which is kind of fun.
So how do I get on the guest list?
there was just a lot of diversity. That was just something they really wanted all the time. Just because, I mean, with diversity comes perspective. I mean, you get different perspectives,
right,
which means different stories. And, you know, you're now reading something in a way that you wouldn't have read it before if it was written by someone else, just because their perspective might be different, whether it's culturally or geographically or racially or whatever. So I think, you know, there probably was a period in the 90s where a lot of mainstream comics might not have catered to someone from a perspective that differed from what maybe mine might have been growing up in a relatively suburban white middle class household.
Right.
So, I mean, I probably would have steered someone towards something by Jessica Albert or Roberta Gregory if they're, you know, if I was trying, talking to someone about comics for the very first time, I was like, I'd be like, oh, have you seen these? I mean, I definitely include, you know, there's stuff on Dark Horse I think was, really, even back in the 90s, really spanned the sexes or whatever. And I know women love superheroes too, so it's not like it's something girls don't like. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I hate to continue to plug this over and over again, but like, when I talk to people who don't read comics, like one of the first things I always tell them to go get is Alex and Ada. That would, you know, to me, it was just such a good story. It's so well drawn, so well written, and it obviously it steers you, you know, it shows you what's out there besides the superhero stuff. And I don't know, that's usually my go-to when I talk to people who don't read comics is, yeah, go check out Alex and Ada.
I've never read it.
I was waiting for Chris or Brian to back me up here, but they're both.
No,
like,
it's really good.
I've heard it's good. I always looked at them. They have really.
It was done by the covers. It was done by the Luna.
Jonathan Luna.
Did the Luna brothers do it or no? Just one of them.
Jonathan Luna, I believe, did that one, and I want to say Joshua Luna did Whispers, which I was pleasantly surprised by. That was really good.
Well, they both did Girls.
Yes.
Which
and
is another one.
The Sword,
really good.
I believe.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah, it's weird, but good. But yeah, Alex and Ada was really good. I mean, that was all on Scott's recommendation.
I do have my moments, but probably
yeah,
not.
I think you will attract more women into comics because of the diversity of the stories now, and like. I think like right now, like the only one that's coming to mind, and it's just because it's the first, you know, I've read it recently, is The Violent. I think The Violent is a good example of comics not being just about superheroes.
Well, there's also the.
There's a ton of other ones, but it's still one that's coming to my head right now.
Well, I'm not going to lie, dude. I still love the Archies. I'm, you know, they're the best.
Well, there's also. The argument that comics tend to be too violent and masculine, too. So, I mean, The Violent might not be the first one you want to recommend to somebody.
Well, what about Lady Killer?
Again, I've never read Lady Killer. It's
a fantastic book.
Yeah, exactly. It was awesome.
1950s housewife assassin. How could you go wrong?
Right.
That sounds great.
Oh,
it is. It
was
really
fantastic.
Good. It was fantastic. And, yeah, and the weird thing about it is that she fit the stereotype 50s woman has to have dinner on the table, you know, blah blah blah, and then like, but like 2 hours later she was putting some chokehold on some somebody.
Well, I was gonna say Saga seems to be a universal hit with just about everybody.
Yeah,
so
that it does.
Yeah, my wife did not care for it, but that's, I think it's just because there was someone giving birth on the first page. So,
does your wife like comics at all, or
some stuff? Yeah, I thought she would. She likes particular things, so I thought that'd be one that she would like. I even waited like till I had like 10 or 12 issues to be like, "Here's all of them, check it out." And she's like, "Nope." Well, she generally makes her opinion known in like the first 12 seconds of something. So
she opened the first page and goes, "Ah, no thanks."
That's a first. Everybody has pretty much universally loved that.
Well, I think if she actually, you know, read through the whole first issue, it might be a different story, but
yeah,
she, like I said, she formed her opinion very quickly and that was it. I was like, all right, it's fine, whatever.
Sometimes that's all it takes. I know I've done it before, so
yeah,
can't really fault them. Is there anyone got anything else on the topic or do we move on?
No,
nothing and nothing.
Yeah, hopefully I didn't sound too dumb.
No, you fit in perfect.
It's important. I mean, it's important. I'm glad that, you know, people are talking about it for sure. It does seem like things are getting better, or at least more diverse, if that means better. I mean, it does to me. But
I agree. Like I can't push it more.
It's going to evolve. I mean, you can only do so much about with superheroes. You know, and the next crop or generation that comes in, you know, they're going to probably be like. I want to try something else.
What are you doing over there?
He's preparing dinner or something.
It's not me.
That might be me. I just drank from a bottle.
Sounds like,
yeah, it's Damien making all the noises, not me.
Just used to it being Chris.
I'm so used to Dorito King making all the noise.
I've got nothing around me but my tablet, and that's it.
All right, just checking.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So as we mentioned at the top of the show, our overrated, underrated for the week is Seattle bands. I'm assuming they weren't throwing a year on this, so whatever. But I don't know.
Because Damien is from Seattle, okay, that's why I picked it.
All right, yeah. It's fine by me because I'll go right off the bat. Overrated. I absolutely hated them back in the '90s for pretty much no reason. But now that I get stuck listening to them constantly, they're okay, but I don't understand people's fascination with Pearl Jam.
Ah, you bum.
Bum. Maybe it's just me. Plus, I figured, like, somebody's probably going to take the low-hanging Nirvana fruit, but...
No.
Pearl Jam, yeah, I never understood it back then because I was just being a hater. And now that, you know, they got some decent songs, I'm not going to lie, but, like, I don't get it. I don't get, like, why they were such a thing.
It's hard to say living here. I mean, I enjoyed the first two records, but it was kind of in spite of myself because I didn't like stuff like that. I mean, that when Pearl Jam came out, I was, like, fully into, like, Chain of Strength, you know? So I think for me they were, like, because they were doing well, but there wasn't really, like, big label thing at that point. It just seemed like nice guys doing well. I think we were just sort of like, let's support them.
Yeah,
and then as time's gone by, I've totally lost interest. It just isn't something I like. They're on my radar only because I work in a frame shop, and they've got like a Grateful Dead kind of following to them.
Yes, that
people come and like frame posters every single time they play a show anywhere. There's people that work at Amazon who have tons of money who like fly to every concert when they do a tour and like follow them around. It's crazy.
So
I don't
weird.
Get it. It's just like adult contemporary rock to me.
Yeah,
like yeah. It's kind of like a few steps above maybe Sting. As a solo artist.
As I say, being from Chicago, that's exactly how I feel about Disturbed. I mean, what?
Yeah,
yeah,
I don't
you guys
know.
You guys got Naked Ray Gun though.
Those yeah,
cool. We did have. Well, they're still playing, but I've watched
really?
Them. They do like 5-6 shows a year, and I've seen some videos. And the problem is, I think, is it the bass player Pierre Kedzie? He had like a heart attack or a stroke a few years ago, so he's clearly not all physically capable as he once was. And I believe it's the singer, Jeff Pizzotti, has Parkinson's maybe or some weird thing like that. And I saw some video of him, and he just doesn't look – I have such like fond memories of early high school skateboarding and going to see them live and – seeing like the videos now, I'm like, no, I couldn't do it. I couldn't go see them. Pegboy, on the other hand, saw them like 5 years ago. Amazing. They played
awesome.
They played the entire Strong Reaction record and nothing more, and it was beautiful. And there were like 12 people
beautiful.
There. Oh, it was.
Brought tears to my eyes.
I was super stoked because I
had panties on the stage and everything.
I hadn't seen Pegboy since I was 15. I didn't want to hear anything off of that other record they put out in the late 90s. I just wanted to hear, you know. That one record, and that's what they did. All right. My overrated Seattle band, brace yourselves, Kenny Loggins.
What? That's like so out of left field.
Well, I mean, again, I could have picked Nirvana, but I've grown to appreciate Nirvana in my old grandpa age. And I don't know. I don't think about Pearl Jam enough to hate them.
I'm not saying I hate them. I just say I don't get it.
Oh, I don't get it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, they don't bother me one bit. But I don't know. I just picked Kenny Loggins because I thought it was funny.
That is funny.
I have nothing against the guy. He wrote Danger Zone, and that's been a big piece of what's made Archer very watchable. So.
That is very true.
I got nothing, really.
Danger Zone.
Really? No, I was just looking down a list. I'm like, let me pick something really out of left field. And I'm like, there's not a band on here that I'm like, nope, they're the worst. So I was like, yeah, Kenny Loggins. He's got more money than anyone else on this list, so I'll just throw it at him.
I'm into it.
Modest Mouse.
Ah, no, you okay. I can have that one. Never mind. I was thinking of something else.
Oh.
Yeah, they're not great.
No, they're not.
They're not. I don't have a issue with them, but they're not great.
No.
They're there.
If they were on right now, I'd have no idea.
Yeah.
I know they were big for a while. Just like
there's that one stupid song in there that's got big, like, mid-2000s.
I do remember years ago.
Plus, I hate that name.
I do remember years ago when I was leaving band practice and I was driving Laurent home, and I started the car and I forget what I was doing, but he put his Modest Mouse cassette, into my stereo, and I got in the car and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And he's like, Modest Mouse. And I went, eject, and I flicked it behind me. He almost started crying. He was so upset. I'm like, I just got Thoughts by Nesco. We're listening to that right now. Don't touch my radio again.
That's funny.
He was very upset.
Okay.
Sorry.
I tell this story sometimes to people when I've known him for a little while, but I was kind of almost in that band.
Which one?
Were you really?
Modest Mouse. Not really. I mean, there was a period of time when I was in Undertow, I was also playing in a band with Eric and Jeremy, who were the drummer and bass player of Modest Mouse. And we only, like, practiced, like, 3 or 4 times. Like, we were just fucking around. And I was in Undertow, which was doing a lot, like, was kind of busy at the time. And to go to practice, I'd have to have my mom basically drive me out to Issaquah, which was just a pain in the ass. So practice was only, like, twice a month for us. And we mainly sat around and talked comics, because Eric, actually, bass player of Modest Mouse, is huge into comics. Actually, still, when they go on tour, he still plays D&D also with, like, the same group of dudes that he sees every time he plays every, like, place on tour. He's an awesome dude. But
yeah, Chris, way to ruin that guest. Nice going.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
I don't care. I still stand behind you. I didn't like Modest Mouse.
No, you don't have to. I mean, it's, you know, I can understand when people don't like certain bands. Like, I like Smiths and Morrissey. I totally get it when people don't. It's not like I'm like, really? What is you don't hear in this weird fey yodeling man? I mean, I accept that. So I accept that with Modest Mouse for sure. I mean, that name is a little hard to take too. I mean, I think it's the iteration there. I don't know what that is, but yeah. But they had said, like, hey, you know, we're gonna start playing with this guy Isaac. Is that cool? You want to play it? And I was like, no, I kind of got to focus on Undertow. And they're like, oh, it's totally cool, man. And I was like, all right, cool. And then, you know, I didn't really see him much for the next year. And then they started playing shows. And of course, the early Modest Mouse stuff really wasn't my thing. As the second couple records, I really enjoyed. But right around the time, I remember thinking, like, oh, fuck. Like, that could have been awesome. And then I see, like, you know, those guys haven't worked jobs in a decade. And I was like, god damn it. So, yeah, one of those things. But it's, I can get with that. Also, I never really quite understood the whole getting Johnny Marr in the band for, like, a while. It got weird. They got, like, two drummers. It just got strange. It became more of, like, a carnival than a band.
I guess when you can, you just do it. Like.
All right. Did you have an overrated of your own?
Yeah, you know, this is hard because I'm from here and I could probably name a lot of people I know, but I was trying to dig deep, and I actually decided, even though I don't know if it's technically a Seattle band, I believe it's listed as Seattle band on Wikipedia, but I'd probably put Postal Service.
Never heard of them.
That's the, band.
That does sound familiar.
That's the guy from Death Cab Death Cab for Cutie.
That was going to be my next, actually, my other go-to overrated
band. I actually like that band, so.
What, Postal Service?
Not big on the Postal Service, but I do really like Death Cab for Cutie, at least the stuff I've heard.
Yeah, Postal Service for me, it, like, emphasizes, like, my least favorite thing about Ben's voice, which is his over-enunciation. Like, he really, like, says every syllable super clearly when he sings. And now that I've said that, it might kind of drive you crazy. It's a weird thing. There's just this weird way he sings. And in Postal Service, since it's basically dance music with him singing over it, that's all you really get. That's your only really, like, human attachment to the band is the singer. And the way he sings is crazy. And it just, it's like kind of like an evil earworm. It just gets in your brain and just fucks shit up and makes you worse at your instrument from having heard it. So,
now yeah, I'm afraid to listen.
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, I dated a girl that loved that that CD, so I heard it a lot, and I had to chase it with some Mars Volt in it to get it out of my head. So
that's nice.
Alrighty, underrated Seattle bands. This is probably going to come as a huge shocker. Sunny Day Real Estate.
Oh yeah, they're great.
Duh! Like, why did they never make it? I still don't understand.
I was going to say them too, but then I figured you guys would pick it, and I was like,
well, it's not like it's a secret that I'm a fanboy here. So
we all are.
Yeah, that's a...
Yeah, well, I put in for the new record. Did you? I don't think so. Nailed it. Nothing?
Whatever. What do you mean you put in for the new record?
Jeremy Enix, new solo record. It's on Pledge Music. I pledged.
Oh. I didn't know about it.
Because I'm a fan, and you're
not.
Do
you have Return of the Frog Queen?
Yes, I do. I have all of his solo records.
Okay.
I'm a nerd, and I...
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
They have a Straight Edge connections, if you know. If
you're, oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because Dan...
In, yeah, Resolution.
Yeah, Dan was in Resolution, and Nate was in Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Which just still boggles my mind.
Now, in that video, the very first video they did off of Diary, is Jeremy Enoch wearing a Youth of Today t-shirt? Because it looks like he is.
He might be. I mean, he was in a band right before Sunday Real Estate called 2 Minutes Hate that sounded exactly like Neurosis.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's
weird.
Yeah, he was like kind of a crust punk before he kind of got into Sunday Real Estate.
Interesting.
He was an interesting dude. He wrote some pretty killer songs that 2 Minutes Hate band.
Now I need to look that up.
Now, have you ever met him?
I have met him once or twice, but I didn't really run with his group of people. I knew I knew the Brotherhood guys more than I knew, like, even Dan. I didn't really know Dan. Resolution wasn't around for very long, and they were kind of in this weird in between time, so I didn't really get to know those dudes too much, but they were great. I mean, I love that Diary record. I love the Thief Steal Me a Peach 7-inch is amazing, super good. I even liked him before Jeremy joined the band, that one 7-inch with Dan singing. I think that's pretty good too. It's not as good, but
are you talking about the one on Pusshead or?
No, I don't know what it's on. Maybe it got reissued or something. It's just a text on the front that says "Sunny Real Estate," and it's
flowers. That Flatland Spiders one, or
yeah, I think so. That sounds right.
Yeah, I've never.
I think seen that, but I never heard it though.
They played a show before they were Sunny Real Estate, also in that same lineup, called Chewbacca Kaboom.
Oh my god,
I might get made fun of. I don't really care. My underrated you did Sunny Real Estate.
Heart.
Correct.
No. Heart. I do like Heart though.
Yeah, that would be
Queensryche.
Yeah. Alright, way to steal mine. Yeah. My underrated is Queensryche. Sue me.
That is awesome.
I will cop to that record they did on Roadrunner was horrible. That sounded like Steely Dan meets Funkadelic or whatever it was. But yeah, pretty much from the first EP. I even like the later stuff, like Tribe and Operation Mindcrime 2. And their last two albums with the new singer are great. Their new album's excellent, so yeah, I don't, whatever. I love Queensryche, sue me.
It's never been a secret around here.
I hated them for the longest time till we saw them open for Iron Maiden. I was like, oh my god, I think I like Queensryche. And I like Queensryche, so.
And then you were like, no, I actually do.
No, I was listening to them on the way home from work today.
In preparation for your underrated choice?
No, I have their new album on my phone, so it's just shuffle and comes on at random, and I'm like, yes, this song again for the millionth time.
Right on.
That is awesome.
In between, I don't know them. What happened?
I don't know them. So.
Oh, yeah, they came on between like Ken Mode and, you know, Rick Astley or whatever.
Right.
Rick Astley.
I don't know.
That's awesome.
Well, Brian, if you want to say what my underrated is, I'm pretty sure you know then.
I have no idea. Nevermore?
No.
I was thinking that.
Dude, Enemies of Reality is a... Oh, my God. It's a masterpiece.
That is so good.
So you like that album?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not. I know them. I've not chosen to listen to them. I've never heard them before in my life.
Oh, man.
The guys in my band know them. They talked about them. They're always like, you don't know Nevermore, man? They're like, from here. I was like, no, I don't.
Don't you love that? Just because they're from here doesn't mean I need to... Like, I don't know every band in Chicago just because I live here.
Yeah, after the band Chicago, this town lost me.
Well, are you going to spit it out, Chris, or are you just going to...
Well, I actually have a couple.
Just pick one. We all got to work sometime in the next couple days.
Oh, shut up. All right. I'll give it to Injun Kid.
Yeah, right on.
Righteous, that's a good record.
Yes. And the only bad thing about it is it took my ignorant ass years later to figure out that it was awesome.
I didn't discover that album until like 2009.
That's the shame. That's like the damn shame of it all.
That is the curse of living in the straight edge bubble during the 90s.
Yep.
Yeah. That's on Revelation.
That
it can't be good.
Fucking heavy, dude.
It's great.
Yeah, you have that one. Like, the only song I ever heard was Windshield. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, dude, whatever. Seattle. Fucking, yeah, it sounds like indie rock. And then it goes right into the second song. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah, you just talked about. In the back of my car. And then, like, that second song, I forgot what it's called. I don't have the list memorized, but...
It's Fighting Tolls?
Yeah, it's fucking heavy as fuck. It's like, shit. And then, like, and another bad part of it is to find out that it was fucking Greg Anderson.
What the hell did you say?
Oh, I didn't know it was Greg Anderson from Brotherhood.
Oh, okay.
It was an interview on YouTube with Greg Anderson that made me check out Captain Beyond. So nothing.
I actually had three bands. It was going to be a toss. It was them, God. Seaweed, and obviously Kiss It Goodbye.
Thanks.
Well. I'm thinking more of She Loves Me, She Loves Me Not, and you weren't on that record, so.
No, I was not on that record.
Yeah, way to go.
I did my best. I drew all the pictures. That's as close as I get.
I mean, that's something.
And, yeah. Like, well, Brian and I have already discussed this record, I think, countless and countless, countless times of how just unbridled hatred that spews from that album.
It's a good album. It's a pretty good album.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, pretty good album.
And Brian's holding back right now.
I don't want to. If I start, we'll be here till like 2 in the morning, so I'll just.
That's true. But it was between those, but I have to give it to Injun Kid because Angel Wings is actually a really awesome record.
Yeah, it's a great record. They did a 7-inch after that. I think it was the last thing they did, and it's so good. It's so heavy. I think, who did it? I can't remember. Merge maybe did it, but it was. If you find it's red, if you ever see it, grab that. It's usually in like used bins for a buck. So.
And the real sad part, and it's kicking my and it pisses me off so much is the fact that Injun Kid actually did play at the Fireside. And like Brian said, we were in our fucking straight edge bubble, so.
Yeah, I saw them a lot.
I deviated a bit here and there.
He went to that show and he said they were loud as shit.
Yeah, Greg had a lot of stuff. I used to fall asleep to them a lot. I know it's not a shining endorsement, but they're. this place we'd play, we'd have shows in Seattle is called the Velvet Elvis, and it was like a. Place for plays more than shows, so it had seats that kind of went up, if you know what I mean, like from the stage floor you'd play on the floor, but then there was like rows of theater seats that went
right.
To the yeah,
like filmmakers.
And so when yeah exactly, so as we you'd come in, you'd kind of walk to where the people are playing, and then you walk up and sit down in a seat if you didn't feel like standing in front, which most people did. But Injun Kid, I'd always go sit down and I'd always fall asleep, But it was like, because it was like beautiful and heavy and kind of almost overwhelmed your senses to the point where you just kind of shut down a little bit. Like, it was great. And then the last show, they let off fireworks in that place. And it was crazy. Yeah, that was a good club.
All right. Did you have...
Oh, was it my turn?
Yep.
Yeah.
Chris takes a long time.
I was going to say... I was going to say Galleon's Lap. I don't know if you guys have heard
of it. I've heard of it. I don't think I've heard it.
It was what Greg Anderson did before Injun Kid.
Really?
It was,
did they... Brian, have you heard it? I know I've seen some...
Nope.
I want to say it had Nate from Sunny Day and Eric Ockery, who was in Tree People, played drums, who's also Kerry Ockery's brother from the band Hammerbox. You guys know that band?
No.
Okay, never mind. but... They had a tiny bit of fame here, so I don't know how that extends, you know. But they were great. They had a super like Rites of Spring kind of DC vibe to them, and they played very few shows. But they broke up relatively quickly and did one record, and it's awesome.
Who put out the record?
Scorch Records, which was a label for like a few minutes. I think he did like they did like an Amenity 7-inch. And I think the Galleon's Lap 12-inch, and that might be it.
See, that's where I think I might have saw it. Like, I think I might have saw it, like, in Maximum Rock and Roll, like...
Yeah, probably.
Because the name's familiar. Or I might have seen it, like, in a...
Pizza.
Sweet, dude. What kind did we get?
Oh, just regular.
Just cheese?
Yeah. I got kids.
What's wrong with pepperoni?
Ooh, and a jump rope.
And a jump rope. Nothing's wrong with pepperoni. It's my daughter will only eat pepperoni if it's cold the next day. Yeah, I don't know. She's super specific. But yeah, it looks like Gowns Lap. I think it's on YouTube. You can probably listen to the thing.
No, but yeah, I do recall seeing like an ad for it or something in Maximum Rock and Roll or in some distro's list of stuff they were selling. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just say, if you're familiar with Winnie the Pooh, I think that's where Winnie the Pooh goes at the end of the Pooh stories. Like when Christopher Robin grows up.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was like, there was a band called Winnie the Pooh? What?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I know, right? Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
So now we will wrap everything up with the best thing ever.
Of the week.
Of the week. Because that's what we do. And you'll be happy to know that my pick is not going to be the new Baroness, because I did that, I think, twice already.
3 weeks in a row, I think.
So I really am feeling like I shouldn't say this, but whatever, I'm the host, I do what I want. For years, you hear about how awesome the show is, and I'm like, it can't be that good. I finally started watching Mad Men, and it kind of is that good. Holy cow. I'm like... halfway through the first season, and that show rules.
Don Draper.
Yes.
I'm into it.
I'm a bit of a... great.
Dude, I got into that show when it first came cool. on.
Yeah, well, I don't
I
have cable,
I got back into it
so.
In 1985.
I'll just say that the only good thing about the second half of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was John Hamm, because that show was super disappointing.
I must have missed that, because I gave up on that show after about
seven. He's in, like, the
episodes.
Last two episodes, and he's amazing. I think he's got, like, wooden hands or something. I don't know. It's great.
Nice.
My best thing ever for this week is, I'm sure most people here are familiar with the Bernie Sanders Feel the Burn tagline.
Yes.
Apparently it's a joke, which is disappointing, but it doesn't detract from how amazing this is. This guy I know posted a Gary Johnson for Libertarian Party president of 2016, and it's a picture of Gary Johnson with his arms folded wearing a pair of jeans, and it says, "Feel the Johnson."
Ew.
And if that was his real campaign slogan, he could say, "I'm going to eat babies the minute I'm elected." I'd be like, fucking A, I'm still voting for him. That's the best. I'll take jury duty for that guy, because that kicks ass. The only thing that can make that poster awesome. Better is if he had the Robert Plant ICBM going down the leg. But I cried from laughing. I was at work. I'm at my desk. I'm crying from laughing looking at it. My boss like, "What is so funny?" I'm like, "I'm not even going to tell you because I'll probably get fired." So Feel the Johnson 2016. Get into it.
I still like the shirt from the Dr. Steve Bruel that I sent you.
No, that's not bad.
You want to elaborate so we know what the hell you're talking about?
I saw it on Facebook, so I sent it to Brian. There's a Dr. Steve Bruel shirt, and it says,
Oh,
it goes Bill. It says Bill Gates invented Microsoft.
Oh, that is.
He's got his picture on the front.
Did you ever watch the show?
Yes, I have watched the show.
And I was gonna say because that's how he talks on the show. It's super funny.
I know.
There's a handful of duds, but when he hits one, oh my god!
All right, that shirt is actually really funny. Bill Gates invented Microsoft.
I'm pretty much into it anytime Terry Bruce Hiplow's on the show.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty funny, but I don't really have a best thing ever.
That's so weird. I feel like you... Oh, wait, you know you never have one. Never mind.
I never do. I don't...
Yeah, apparently you don't like your son. So... What about you, Damien?
Let's see. I kind of forgot to have one ready, too. But I think right now I've been, with all the sad internet news this week with Alan Rickman and David Bowie and Lamy before that dying, I really got a kick out of the video of the guys in Oregon who have taken over the militia, who have taken over the wildlife refuge office, that are pissed at people sending them dildos.
What?
And the fact they made a video... Yeah, people, they asked, basically like to send them snacks because they weren't super well prepared for being in there for too long. So, of course, people being funny have decided that it'd be funnier to send them just big bags of dildos.
That's that Clive and Bundy guy's son, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes it so much better.
Dude, I totally wish. I got to look this up tomorrow. I'm going to start sending some stuff.
My favorite thing
I was like, someone's got to send him a box of glitter.
My favorite thing ever
spring loaded
was when that Clive and Bundy guy was being touted as this, frontiersman hero on Fox News. And then he started spouting all this super racist stuff. And they're like, oh my God, cut the mic, get him off TV. We didn't know. I was like, this is so perfect. Could not run from that guy faster if they tried. It was too late.
Yeah.
He started making.
The hashtags people be giving them have been quite fun, too.
Well, now I know what I'm doing at work tomorrow.
Y'all Kata, that's right. Yeah.
And then the one I like a little better, Vanilla Isis.
That one was good, too.
Anyway, their reaction to that this week.
I'm totally looking at that. Well, thank you for giving me something to do at work tomorrow, and... that is going to wrap us up for the week. So, as always, you can find me on Twitter at XorsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find Chris at SkateXEdge. And you can find Damien at Damien Johnston.
Yes, that's right.
So, until next week, have a good week.
You are now leading the world of Musings of a Geek podcast network. Stay geeky, my friends.